This is Sparks from Little Sparks Cosplay, and you're listening to The Tranny Dummies. With Rob.
Heroes, adventurers, oddities. Looks like they've all made it to the Nexus. Little bit heavy on the oddities.
And Daryl.
The Nexus is pretty normal to me. You want weird? Go to Wacky World.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 232 of the Training Dummies. This is January 10th, 2019. I think I got that right, huh?
Yeah, I think you did.
So good, yeah. My name's Rob, and we're not going to talk about running and exercise and everything. we've been told for a gaming podcast we may not talk about gaming that much, but I don't know. Yeah, Daryl, how you doing, man?
Oh, man. I'm doing good. I got the intro stuff all sorted out after I lost my hard drive, so I'm happy about that. I now have a backup of the intro as well, so if it happens again, we're set. So yeah, doing good. Managed to get that sorted this week, so that's all good.
Well, in order to keep this ball rolling here, you guys can see our beautiful guest down there in the bottom pane. Can we get a warm Training Dummies welcome for Not Paradox? Good one, Kevin. I like the new round of applause.
Yeah, I know. So good.
Hey, Paradox, how you doing, man? Welcome. It's your first time guest here, and we don't have many of those anymore. We like to cycle through some of our older ones, but I've been following your work for a while. Why don't you give us a little bit of background about who you are and what you do with gaming and Blizzard games? And
okay, yeah, I am a neuropsychology major, and I also have been running a marketing company for quite a while, about probably 5 or 6 years now. Actually probably closing in on 7 actually. And I just for fun, I mean, I started a channel. I had some, I really enjoy Heroes of the Storm. So I was like, oh, I've got these kind of weird, quirky combos that people haven't seen before. So I'm going to make a video to explain it. And people really like those. So I just was like, you know what? I'll make one every other day. And I haven't stopped doing that for 10 months. Made a channel. The channel got big enough. I got invited to BlizzCon to be a guest. To talk about things for Heroes of the Storm, and nice. I've probably one of the largest Heroes of the Storm YouTubers now. So I mean, it's been a crazy 10 months. It's been a ton of fun, but yeah, that's probably the majority of this. I've been doing Twitch streaming lately, but I'm very inconsistent. I'm trying to get more consistent, but it's harder than people think.
When you say your channel's grown, you're one of the bigger Heroes YouTubers now. Do you feel like there's, with everything that's kind of gone on with HCG and Heroes in general, do you feel like there's like less people pushing that space now? I know for a while there was like, you know, you got Pally Time and, you know, a lot of kind of big names are real on the Heroes train. And I think, like, I don't know, there's just a weird vibe around some of that now. How's that working?
You know, I haven't checked ever since, I haven't checked the Imperius launch, but about 5 days after all the HCC stuff, people who normally were posting pretty regularly, like MF Pally Time and Nubkex, who were much larger than myself, and Grubby, all of them haven't posted very much since then. So yeah, I think after a lot of the announcements, some of them are just a little wary. A lot of the people that were trying to grow their channel too kind of decided, they're like, is this the place to grow anymore? I think for the people who already have an established community, it's perfectly fine to continue making content, be a streamer. And some streamers have actually grown since then. Like I saw McIntyre on Twitch, for example. He's a pro player for Heroes Hearth. And his stream averaged somewhere between like maybe 50 to 70 people. And I started watching him stream recently, and he's been averaging like 200 to 300. So while some people leave, some people are finding more success because there's people that are still here, still wanting to see content. So it is, yeah, I would imagine out of the ones that are still active, I need to double check to see who's made Imperius videos, but out of the ones that are left, I'd imagine I'm probably in the top 3 if I was to take a guess. That's YouTube awesome, anyways.
Man. Well, I know you deserve it, man. Your content is phenomenal. I love, you know.
I appreciate that.
Anytime I see a new video come up, I get on it right away. I like the beginner's guides that you're doing lately.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because I love playing, but I'm not very hardcore at all, so I'm super casual. So when something comes out, you know, like your Sylvanas rework and some talent options and stuff, I really enjoy those videos. I feel like we're getting into the meat of it already. Daryl, do you have any other, like, maybe want to ease into it a little bit, have a couple drinks first or something?
No, we can jump right into it here. I can get this this little preamble out of the way.
Okay.
If you have any questions or comments or just want to find out what we are doing, we're active on Twitter at Training Dummies. Rob is at Rob Copeland. Myself, Daryl, is at Daryl_TTD. Also, if you like the show and want to support us, please check out our Patreon at patreon.com/trainingdummies. No obligation, of course. We're just happy that you listen. So, yeah, we're already jumping into it. Hero stuff is the topic here. So, let's just carry on.
What got you into Heroes of the Storm as opposed to, you know, there's a lot of options out there right now. So what kind of drew you to Heroes?
So I used to play League of Legends. I played Dota 1 on Warcraft 3, and I played League of Legends, and I've played a lot of games. I don't know exactly what, you know, it's actually funny. I did start making some videos in League of Legends. I made this whole series a while back. I'm pretty sure I deleted all of them since then, but I made this whole series back then, and I didn't exactly know how to market it, so it didn't go anywhere exactly. And then I was making this whole psychology series that was, again, didn't really go anywhere. That was kind of my own fault. I knew what I needed to do. I just didn't really want to do it. And so I've played a lot of them. I just really enjoyed Heroes of the Storm. It was a game that I was pretty good at, and it was also a game that the games were quick. And I'm someone that's usually pretty busy. I'm in school full time. I work full time. So for me to be able to pop on a game, spend 15 to 25 minutes tops, and usually get a couple good games in was fun for me. When I played League of Legends, I felt like the first half of the game, I did nothing. Like, it was just CSing. It was maybe a couple ganks here and there, maybe a little bit of like trades, but overall it was really boring. And then the second half of the game was exactly what I liked. Heroes of Storm was just that the entire time. And that's why I really enjoyed it, because it was always active. There was always something going on. And I was like, you know what? This is the game. If I want to put any extra effort into this, is the game. I put some more effort into it. I bumped up to Masters and I was like, all right, I'll make a couple videos. People like the videos. Just went from there. But I've tried a lot of things, and I even can't talk too much about it, but I got approached by some people to make Fortnite videos. And I was like, this isn't really my style of game. I've never played Fortnite. I'm not great at shooters in general. And I was like, even if I was making this content, I wouldn't feel like I'm coming from a place of, I can teach you how to play this. I could go straight on the psychology route, which is what they were asking for. But in general, I was like, you know what, I'm gonna stick with what I enjoy rather than switching to something I may or may not enjoy. And I enjoyed Heroes of the Storm.
I think that's a key thing, because it kind of really shows through in your content too, that there is a passion about it. Like, you care about what you're doing, and you understand, like, when you're digging through these talents, immediately new hero comes out and you're already talking about synergies here and how they work with other heroes. And I think that's a key thing. You have to really care about what you're doing, because like you said with Fortnite, like, if somebody could offer me all the money in the world to make Fortnite videos, and like, I just don't care, you know? I mean, if the price was right, maybe I'd try at least. But
yeah, exactly.
Now, I remember you talking on Into the Nexus about the psychology piece. That's really interesting to me, because I know that there's been a lot of talk about toxicity in the gaming community, and, you know, especially in games where, where you're either forced to work with people, like in Heroes of the Storm, or in Overwatch, where you can actually converse with the other team. How was your original approach to the psychology of it? I think you were saying that you were kind of talking about how to deal with some of these situations, or you know, how to navigate that, these kind of, you know, teammates.
Yeah, I mean, the general idea of my toxicity video was I used, if I remember right, I can't remember the exact studies I used, but I essentially said that evolutionary psychology puts every community as if we're a tribe, right? And the people that were more likely to stay in a tribe were more likely to survive longer. And as we know of anything about evolutionary psychology or evolution in general, is that the people that survive longer have more kids, and those genes pass on. So the people that were more likely to survive in a tribe were more likely to succeed. And so we have these things built into our psychology, built into our genes, that try to keep us in this tribe. And I believe that, and this is my own personal belief, so take this with a grain of salt, but I believe that the whole toxicity stems from the fact that we're all trying to stay in this tribe. And so if someone tries to say, like, if you start losing, you feel your tribe's breaking apart. And so you want to point at someone to put the blame on someone that might keep the tribe alive, but with that person out of the tribe. I feel like a lot of toxicity stems from people getting nervous in a situation they don't like, they don't feel comfortable in. And because of the situation they don't feel comfortable in, they start trying to place blame on people. When in reality, we don't really ever need to place blame on anyone. We just have this feeling like we should. Like, hey, if it's not my fault, I get to stay in the tribe. So if I point out someone and it's their fault, then they're kicked out of the tribe. And so that was kind of my whole idea about the toxicity in games, is the way you combat this is instead of trying to really like corral everyone, which I feel like a lot of people feel like they're doing, they're all babysitters, which is kind of the case, honestly. But I like to explain to people a lot of times the best way to keep someone from just completely tilting is to kind of reassure them that they get to stay in the tribe. Something that's, if someone calls out someone and is like, hey, we don't have enough damage, it's because our Sylvanas went the wrong build. You could be like, hey, you know what? Let's not worry about that because this build scales a little bit better. Or no worries, we just need to take a fight a little bit differently. I understand where he's coming from. That way, that person is one, you calm down one person. At the same time, you reassured someone that they get to stay in the tribe. Because if it's just two people arguing back and forth, they're both have that same feeling that they're going to be taken out of the tribe. And so that's why the arguments just go on forever and people spend like 60% of the game typing. And that's why even games that don't have all chat get really, I mean, all chat brings in a whole different beast of toxicity where people are just trying to tilt the enemies. But even just in cooperative games, there's so many times that people can get so tilted and so toxic when it's completely cooperative experience. So I think that's part of the thing that I really wanted to explain in that video, is that you don't even need all chat. You simply just need people to be willing to stick with each other, you know?
Yeah, it reminds me of like some of the reality shows like Survivor and stuff like that, where like people are, at some point you feel like people are going to start rallying to find a weak link. And if there's not one, they'll create one. And it's a lot easier if the weak link isn't you. So immediately people are kind of on their heels a little bit trying to find a way to put that onto somebody else.
Yeah. I think I might use the witch trials in there too, where one person one person says this person's a witch, and then in order for that person to stay alive, they say another person's a witch. And while that was just a story in The Crucible, I mean, it essentially is what we're dealing with today in a smaller scale on every single video game you play.
Nice. Brett in the chat room says, it sounds like Hell's Kitchen. Yeah, it kind of does.
Yeah, definitely. And that could be, that could be essentially the same thing. Is, I mean, I watch a lot of Hell's Kitchen. I love Gordon Ramsay. Every year for my birthday, I go to a Gordon Ramsay restaurant. So Gordon Ramsay, that I would say definitely like Hell's Kitchen. I mean, you're all on a team and the weakest link's going to be kicked out. So if you can really show someone else is doing it worse than you, you have a higher chance of surviving. So yeah, I would say it's just like that.
Let's talk a little bit about HCG and what kind of impact that's had. And I know we kind of dipped into it a little bit, talking about how it's affected like some of the other channels and whatnot. Do you think that the HGC going away has really been that bad, or are we in the community, you know, are we making it worse than it is?
I've been asked this question a lot, and I've come to say a few things. One is, a competitive game without a competitive scene just does feel weird. That's the biggest thing about it, is that yes, it is, for so many people, it's pretty bad. The second part of this is like, how many people did really actually care about it? You know, like whenever I would do a coaching session with someone, I'd be like, well, have you ever watched this pro player? And like, they would never know what pro player is talking about. So I like to ask people sometimes, I'm like, if there was enough people who were watching HGC that would quit this game when HGC left to actually kill the game, then there would have been enough people watching HGC that they wouldn't have gotten rid of it. You know, like if there was enough people actually that invested in the HGC, it wouldn't be gone. But what I say a lot of times is like, I have videos that got more views than the HGC final, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't want to, I'm not bragging by any sense of the means. What I'm saying is that we did some paper math after I was talking to a few friends of mine. It was like $6 million at a minimum they put into HEC every single year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why don't you just throw $6 million at some of these like content creators at that point? You know, mm-hmm. if it's not, if you're already getting more views in other means, but I do understand where they're coming from on the people that are a little upset about it, because it is a competitive scene. It gives people something to look forward to who are in the highest levels of play.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, it gave people something to cheer for, something to join in on. I just don't think that there was enough viewership. And I personally believe that instead of them just getting rid of it, they should have just revamped the whole system. Find out what they could do to make it more interesting. I was always a prominent believer in less is more. And I felt like we were getting kind of overwhelmed by the amount of like games we had, the amount of matches we had. So I could never tell when there was an interesting game. I would go and I would check a game on their MSB, for example, Midseason Brawl, and I would see a game versus like BTG and Luna Meow. Now, those teams weren't actually in MSB, but teams like them that were minor region teams, that their average MMR in their regions was actually equivalent to about Diamond MMR in our region, which felt like they shouldn't be pro teams. So say I popped on a Saturday and I'm like, I want to watch a game. And I watch that and I go, I feel like my Hero League's more coordinated this. And then you turn it off and you're like, why am I going to watch MSB? And yeah, I think that's the part that kind of turns some people away. When I was in the competitive scene for League of Legends, what I noticed is the only game I had ever heard about was the finals and semifinals. And that was it. That was all I ever heard about. Everything else, never saw it anywhere until the finals and semifinals. And then I saw it and everyone watched it. And there was more people watching that than the NBA at its peak. And I was like, that is the future of esports. Then when I go to Heroes of Storm, we're overwhelmed by this amount of information, by this amount of games. So I decided, I was like, you know what? I don't think they're doing this right. So instead of them just ditching the whole thing, I think they could have just revamped it to be more of a one big show, and then everything else, they could still keep their whole league. I mean, Magic the Gathering does the same exact thing. Magic the Gathering, you make $60,000 a year by being in their pro scene. If you even get into the pro tour, right? The pro tour that goes through, I want to say like 11 countries or something. You even get into that, not even win a single thing. Once you get in, you get into it, you make $60,000 a year. Then your sponsors will usually pay for all of your travel, as well as a variety of extra expenses. And a lot of times, let's pay extra cash. I know the Channel Fireball sponsor, for example, they were paying $5,000 for every time you made it on the major channel. Meaning if you made it into the semifinals or the finals or whatever, every time that the major channel featured you against another big player, you made $5,000 right there.
So
if you got sponsored by Channel Fireball and you were in the Pro Tour, there's a year card games. You know what I mean? That's what we needed to see, was some major event. Pro Tour, well, there's a lot of tournaments that are going on all the time. The Magic players know when the Pro Tour is, and they know when the big games are. So I guess that was my concern about HEC. Was, I know this went way further than that, but it is a question that everyone's wondering, is like, is the game dead? It's like, no, the game's not dead. If the game would die from this one announcement, then they would have had enough viewership that then this wouldn't have been an issue. Because it's not even an issue, like, because they didn't have the viewership means that HEC disappearing is not going to be that big of a deal. Other than the fact that, again, many people, streamers, content creators might be leaving. I've seen a lot of them shift over to other games, but that could also be a good thing for some of like the middle of the ground streamers and content creators to kind of push far ahead, as there's still viewers out there.
I
see that.
I remember people clamoring, you know, when Overwatch kind of was getting the esports treatment, and next thing you know, Overwatch League was on the launcher and all these things were being featured, and it kind of seemed to blow up a little bit faster and get a little more support and a little more push than Heroes ever did. And people were, at the time, you know, some of the conversations I heard were, why isn't Heroes getting this treatment? And I feel like, you know, you kind of hear things after the fact. You know, I've heard that Heroes was always really in the red. It was never as big. It didn't come out the gate as strong as Overwatch did. I know My highlight of every single BlizzCon that I've ever been to, one of my top moments was watching the finals, you know, sitting there. Mm-hmm. Daryl and I would go and get seats, and we'd sit there for hours, you know, sit there through the last several teams just to have good seats for the final matches. And it was amazing, and I loved doing it. But like you're saying, we're trying to watch these games throughout the year. Like, I don't know. It was fun. I liked putting it on my TV and, I got my son, my 5-year-old son sitting there watching with me, and he's loving it. And it's, it's great, but it just wasn't the same as the feeling or the plays or watching the actual BlizzCon event itself. Mm-hmm. Daryl, I know you and I are always look forward to the BlizzCon stuff. Did you watch much outside of that? Or
I tried to, like, when I had time on the weekends, I would put it on. Like, I put it on our TV. We got an app that streams Twitch channels. So if HTC was on and we were doing anything, I'd throw it on the big TV. I'm like, it's great. I love watching it on that. But yeah, as far as HTC period, like, that's what got me into esports. It really is. Cause before that, mm-hmm. I was, and I've mentioned it on the show before, I used to be of the mindset, why would I watch you play a video game when I could play a video game at the same time? Mm-hmm. And then BlizzCon happened and Cloud9 winning the championship, and I was sitting there for it, and the electricity in the crowd, like, that was an amazing experience. And yeah, I was there. Hooked. Yeah, I was just mm-hmm. me and Rob were sitting there too, and like, I was hooked. Like, that was the turning point for me going, okay, esports, I get it. This is cool. I want to watch more. You know, so I'd watch it at home and I'm sad. Like, see, I've got my HTC final shirt on right now. Really, they should take the S off because it's HTC final, right? Because it's over.
Yeah, it is. Get them, you're not wrong.
I know, but like, I enjoyed watching that more than even Overwatch because I can tell what's going on at any point in the game, whereas Overwatch, a lot of times, it's almost too fast-paced, right? They've made a lot of strides on now, like, compared to when the first year we went and watched it at BlizzCon. It was, I didn't have a clue what was going on. And as well, I'm no good at Overwatch, but Heroes, I'm not great, but I know how to play. I know what's happening, so I'm disappointed that HTC is gone, because it's something that I could watch. I understood it all. You know, I could tell if a team was doing good, a team was doing bad, all great mm-hmm. plays, you know, so it's definitely, I'm going to miss it for sure, definitely.
Yeah, speaking of that Cloud9 tournament, that actually wasn't HGC, and this
no,
is where
that's
the...
that's true.
Oh, that's
yeah,
right.
Before, yeah, this yeah. is where the optimistic yeah. side of the HOTS community is looking at this going, well, we had all these changes that could be good, and mm-hmm. now there's no HGC... Could we bring the World Series back? Right. Now, World Series was brought up in partnership with Heroes Hype. Mm-hmm. And Heroes Hearth is actually looking at doing something similar, as they have already talked to sponsors, mm-hmm. People who can help with the event. And it's interesting. So that's where the hope is, because I was there. I mean, I brought mm-hmm. my friend. We used to play Heroes of the Storm back in like the Alpha and everything. And mm-hmm. I brought him over to the convention center in Las Vegas. I live in Las Vegas, so we drove over there. And we were sitting there in the tournament, and mm-hmm. We watched the whole World Series, and it was a ton of fun. And I completely agree. Like, that's when I was like, I want to be in this scene. It would be cool to do something here. And I didn't actually start for a few years later. But yeah, I mean, it's so that's the optimistic side, is people are saying, well, maybe there's something we could be doing to bring something back. I mean, Blizzard didn't pay that much for that event, and then they came after the event was already kind of rolling, and they were like, hey, let's do some stuff with this. Let's give out keyboards, let's give mice, let's give out codes, skin codes, mm-hmm. and let's also do a giveaway that will give out every hero in the game to someone who wins this one giveaway. And so if you can guess they had this thing where it's like, if you could guess the correct team 4 times in a row of who won, you got your entire collection unlocked. And if you won it, if you got it 5 times in a row, you won an Alienware laptop. And it was like, they had all these things that they did. And it started off with just an event that I believe it was started by Heroes Hype. I could be wrong about that. But then it just came out of nowhere. And so I think that that's something that we could see in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would love more of a community. It doesn't have to be community sponsored, but yeah, like, that just reminded me, the very first Overwatch that we watched at BlizzCon wasn't Overwatch League. It was just the World Cup. Yeah. It was, yeah. You know, I think Daryl and I sat in, it was like Sweden or Norway versus China or something, and it wasn't any league stuff at all. So yeah like to it's I don't know, like I'm not disheartened by, I mean, it sucks that it's gone because we loved it and it's great, and when something associated to something you like goes away, it feels bad, you know. So I don't think the game is dead. Hopefully,
I definitely don't think so. No, you did bring up one thing that I want to talk just a minute on, which you explained that Overwatch is kind of hard to watch, like it's hard to follow, anyways. Mm-hmm. And this happens with a lot of games that people don't play. Esports in general is a really weird one because if you don't play the game, you don't understand what's going on, including all card games. Mm-hmm. I mean, if someone plays down a card and the other person goes like this, like you don't know why they're doing that. You don't know why they're all upset. Because you don't know what that card does. Mm-hmm. And so it was a mana leak, by the way. No, I'm just kidding. So it's the same idea with a lot of games. And I think the problem is there was this guy, and I can't remember exactly who it was. I want to say he was a caster for – he switched from being an announcer for basketball, and he switched into esports. And he explained that in order for an esports to actually naturally become a thing – it needs to be easy to follow for everyone. Mm-hmm. And he said, StarCraft is a weird one, but how they made it work was that while they're moving around things so quickly that it seems crazy to follow, all you know is they're really good at what they're doing, and the person with a better army at the end of a fight, or the bigger army at the end of the fight, won. And they said, that's all you need to know. You don't need to play StarCraft to know that there's a big space battle going on, and the person who has the bigger army at the end just won that space battle. And all the rest you see is people like flipping around their mouses really fast. And you're like, wow, these are two really good people. And it's very visual to see what's actually happening, and it's easy to follow. And I think that's kind of the problem with a lot of the ones that are being forced, like HOTS, Overwatch, and I mean, I don't know if you guys saw the announcement, the mini leak announcement for Hearthstone, but a lot of people have been getting a survey on Hearthstone that said, would you still support the game and buy packs if there wasn't a pro scene? And based off that, people are wondering if they're going to do the same thing they did to Heroes of the Storm and just drop the pro scene. And I think it could be the same problem of that it might be hard to follow for people who haven't played Hearthstone. But I mean, I personally think it's pretty easy to follow. And Hearthstone's one of those games that there was a study that was done that said like 70% of the people who watch Hearthstone streams don't play the game anymore. And I could believe it because I'm one of them. I follow this guy named Pizza, a very small streamer, but he's usually like top 100. And I don't play the game anymore purely because I couldn't keep up with the cards coming out without paying a lot of money. And I don't like buying random packs. So I live in Las Vegas, but I'm heavily against gambling. So I don't like I've never bought a loot box in any game. So I don't really like buying packs. I do it in like Magic Gathering because you kind of have to. But I try to buy like drafts instead so I can have a higher chance to get my cards. But anyways, so I think the problem with esports that are being pushed is that they're hard to follow. Overwatch is the same thing for me. I don't watch a lot of Overwatch. Despite the fact that I play the game, I don't know what's happening half the time because they're all using their abilities all at the same time really fast. And it keeps switching from different characters so you can follow your favorite pro players that I can't even tell. I started watching the Rainbow Six Siege pro scene just because the way that they do it's really cool. And they like they zoom out, so you're not on a single character. It zooms out, and you get to kind of see everyone moving in, and it just looks like this really tactical like army battle where like there's all these people that are setting up traps and setting up cameras, and then the other set is going up through like a hallway or breaking through one. It just looks cool to watch, even if you don't play the game, and it shows. This is a game that was a lot of people considered Rainbow Six Siege dead on arrival. And because it came out and its numbers were really, really low. And then they kind of came back, they brought out a cheaper pack. It was like $10 for the cheaper pack. And they tried all these things. And then like year two and three, their numbers are higher than they've ever been. They're they're coming up on, the fourth year. And I watched one of the recent tournaments and it had like 160,000 viewers at one point in the tournament. And it was fun. Like, there were people who have never played this game watching it because it's easy to follow. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the problem right now, is a lot of games are so hard to follow. Esports is so difficult if you try to push it. So we'll see what happens to Overwatch, because I have a hard time watching it, even though I even play that game. Like, I play a lot of Overwatch. I really like the game. It's fun.
The easiest moments that I have watching it are when they do, like, you're talking about those top-down views.
Yeah, they, like, zoom out. Uh-huh. I'm cool with that.
Yeah, that's kind of the moments where I'm like, oh, okay, I see, I get what's going on here. And then all of a sudden,
I wish they would do that more. Here's
Genji's point of view. Well, if you're doing first person Genji, like, I'm like, I don't know what's going on.
But, someone was trying to explain to me that Overwatch wasn't a fast paced shooter, and I was like, all right, I'm going to show you one video. And I literally looked up a clip from the, like, number one Genji in Korea, just of his stream. It was just any random clip from his stream, and I sent it over to him, and they're like, okay, point proven. And I was like, there you go.
Yep.
There you go. All right. Should we jump into fixing the game here?
Yeah, I put fixing in quotes because
not really fixing.
That's relative.
But anyway.
Yeah.
So what would Heroes 3.0 look like if you were to design it?
I've been asked something like this before, and it was kind of a genie thing if you could have three wishes. But I've said this quite a few times, and I personally believe that any game like this, any competitive game, needs to always look at two directions: the competitive side and the casual side. And we have a casual side that doesn't feel very casual. I have a lot of friends that love the characters in this game, but when they start playing, they get people that are like, noob, wrong build, bad this. Why'd you pick Artanis on this map? Why? Oh, so annoying. I'm topping this person's damage. You just get all this toxicity that's just annoying, and it pushes everyone away. One of my friends, his name's Jeff. He loves mostly cooperative games. And the way I can get him into literally any game, even if it's a competitive game, is if it has a strong cooperative mode first. I wanted to show him this. He likes card games, but it's hard to get him into a card game. So I showed him this card game called Eternal Card Game. And you can play the entire with all the same features and all this stuff without ever playing against another person. They have a draft mode against bots. They have and you get to keep all your cards. They have this dungeon mode against bots, and it gets progressively harder. So it's still not an easy thing. And he played that until he almost completed his collection before he actually went and did PvP. So he learned every little bit about the game before he had to deal with the, oh, I'm going to get stomped right away, and I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing against all these better cards. It's the same idea for me. If they want to bring in new players into the game, if you want to keep competitive players, that's where the pro scene comes in, or maybe like a Guild Wars 1 option. I'll talk about that later. But the biggest thing I think every single game needs is a way to bring in new players. A very casual, more casual than we have. Everyone says quick play is casual. That's not casual enough. I want a casual mode that can feel competitive, which is a co-op versus AI, similar to what StarCraft brought in, StarCraft 2, to where there's a progression system and you have this difficult mode that you can actually like improve in, and you can see yourself improving, and you also are getting unlocks at the same time, so you're encouraged to keep playing it. You don't feel like it's just wasted to play all co-op. Like, if you just play co-op versus AI, one, it's never difficult, which means that it's never rewarding. You never lose. You never struggle. I can go to a brutal mission or one of the mutations in StarCraft 2 co-op mission and just get stomped, and then go, okay, I need to change something around. And I'll just get stomped after stomped. And it's like, even on hard, it's pretty challenging. There's parts I almost lose, and then you get into brutal and you're just getting stomped. And it's like, that's what we need. I personally think that with this, all these characters from all these universes, everyone wants to play them, but not everyone likes this competitive scene. Everyone who's coming from World of Warcraft, who does the dungeons, doesn't want to do PvP. Everyone who's coming from Diablo doesn't want to do PvP. And so this large chunk of the Blizzard community that wants to play these characters in another way literally can't without going into PvP, because they're not rewarded for it. So I think that we need a co-op versus AI mode with progression similar to what StarCraft 2 has.
Something like a campaign then? Like different?
Kind of like a campaign. I want it to be what's like a word for like not lifetime, but where it just keeps going. Like because the campaign is like a one and done, right? You put a ton of effort into a campaign. 6 hours later, everyone's done the campaign. You never need to worry about it again. I want an actual mode with a progression system. Yeah, like just something that like you play a map, and I explained it like this usually, where like say you're playing Sonya, you now have a set of items on top of Sonya. These are all stats, but maybe one of the items can give you an extra ability. Like one of them gives you leap when you hit level 10, and you don't even need to pick leap. So you could pick both ults, but you get these items. So you're playing the game, and you every time you complete it, you work towards something that you can get for your next game, kind of like a roguelike. And you buy these things that while you go in game, you can unlock those things. So for example, the StarCraft co-op, you play a game to unlock something that you can unlock next game. For example, let's say you play Zeratul in StarCraft 2. If you can level up Zeratul, it takes, I don't even know, 30 games. I did it. It's not too long, but it's like, say 30 games, you level them to max. You're unlocking more things that you can get when you play the game. And then when you play the game, you don't automatically get everything that you got. You need to go through and earn it while you're in the game. So similar to how Heroes of the Storm is, where you get those talents, you'd be getting talents and possibly gold that you can buy items. It's already in the engine because StarCraft 2 already has similar systems. So they could do it. I'm not going to say they could easily do it, but I am saying that this would be a great way to bring in more people. And I really think that, and it'd be cool for like the people that are already here too. It'd give you a new mode you could play around with. Like there are days I get into ranked and I get really tilted, but I don't want to stop playing the game. And I don't really want to go into like unranked or quick match or anything. It would be cool if there's just another game that I could just be like, you know what? I'm just going to go do the co-op versus AI. Grind a little bit, and it'd be more of the grind RPG side of it rather than the PvP. Let's just get rank in MMR. So that's like my dream. What I personally think HOTS needs is like that. That would bring the casual players in, probably bring a lot of people back to the game because there's a new mode, and it might even just keep some people that are already here going, hey, instead of me getting tilted at one mode, I can just play the other mode for a week and I'll be good. And it might do what it did for my friend Jeff in a lot of other games, where he can play the casual slash kind of gets competitive, but the PvE mode, until you understand all of the mechanics and still until you get the muscle memory down for all of the characters' abilities and ranges. And then once you get used to all of that, now you can go into the competitive if you wanted to. But I talked to the developer of StarCraft 2 who worked on the co-op versus AI mode, and he said that while there's a little bit of a crossover, he says it's something like 10 to 15% of the communities. He says generally it just brought in a completely different community. He said we brought in, like, as we brought this thing out, he goes, we had a community come back to the game larger than our original community. He goes, then it kind of faded down as people got used to it and kind of grinded through all the levels and didn't need to grind anymore. And he said, then we get kind of a burst back every time we bring a new character out. But he said, he's like, we actually didn't need to do a lot of work on it because we had all the assets already done from the campaign. He's like, all these characters are already in the campaign. All these units are already in the campaign. So he's like, all in all, it didn't take a lot of effort from us. So yes, it'll probably take more effort from Heroes of the Storm to do this, but I really think it's necessary, or at least would be really good for the game. Maybe not necessary, but
take something like this event that's going on right now, the holiday event with the game board. I was thinking about this earlier, and I thought that we have gotten to a point where it feels normal and it feels right. This thing that's going on in the background, like these little sub quests that you're getting. This constant flow of something to do and loot boxes. The problem is when it goes away, it feels bad because you're like, wait a minute.
Getting like extra loot boxes.
That and should be normal anything. Because that was cool. And it had this other dynamic going on. And the more I thought about it, I thought, you know, I know that they need things to do for holidays and events to roll out and stuff. But do you feel like something like that should be normal? Like, you know, reskin it however you want. But do you think something where there's this, you know, more something other than play three games as a warrior, like,
I could see them revamping the quest system, maybe, where you get like one big quest a day, and then you can, every time you complete a small quest, you just keep getting another quest. I will say that it was really fun to do it when they did it on the event before that, the Halloween event, which was the had like the Alex Straza skin.
Oh, and yeah. Uh-huh.
Those quests, I felt like when I was joining with my friends, we were all trying to like complete this for each other. So when we got on a map, there was one particular map we got on. It was a Cursed Hollow map, and there were four people who all had the get four watchtower or three watchtowers. Mm-hmm. And I remember we had people, we were like, oh, who needs it? Like, okay, you cap it the first time, and then we're going to protect you. Let them recap it, and then you can cap it again. We're going to bounce it back and forth. Mm-hmm. I'm not kidding you. We got this quest done for four people in one game. And we felt like so proud. Like, it reminded me of when I was doing achievement dungeon runs in World of Warcraft, like where we all got together and we were doing this to get this achievement done. And it was so much fun. Then I was like, this was only fun with a group of five people. Like, if this wasn't with five people, this would just be another tedious thing that you feel you have to do to keep up. Mm-hmm. And that's the only reason why I would say it's cool and not cool at the same time. Like, I don't want someone dying to try to capture a watchtower they don't need to capture so they can complete a quest. Mm-hmm. I'd rather everyone just try to win the game.
Somebody is literally ignoring everything else because they need to get eight merc camps or, you know.
Yeah, that's the only reason why it's tricky. But I do like that idea of having something. So I would love to, like, sit down and brainstorm for a while on getting the same feel of having something unique to do all the time. And that can bring it back to the co-op mode. That's what the mutations do. If you're all in a group co-op, it's not a big deal if you're all working on the same thing. Like in StarCraft 2, they have the mutations where you have to do a specific thing to get that. And every week there's a new mutation and they're painfully hard. But that's the same idea for me. It reminds me of those World of Warcraft achievements that I love so much. Like, Wrath of the Lich King. I did all of them. I got the mount. I was like bragging rights with that mount.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. And I think it was fun to get a little bit of that, like a taste of that back in Heroes of the Storm. But I don't know how they can do it without it ruining the game experience for those like random people that join your group.
Mm-hmm. What about this? This is kind of a heated topic everywhere. I hear anybody talking about it, but the currency systems in game right now, we've got three different currencies and it's a hot mess. What would your recommendation be for maybe fixing or addressing that?
Well, I mean, loot boxes are going away, but I don't know how long that's going to take.
Oh, they're going away, huh?
Yeah, so Activision, Blizzard, EA, and like two other companies are all making a strive to get rid of loot boxes, and there hasn't been an official announcement to do that on this side yet. Well, it's because of laws. Like, the Hawaii, Washington, I want to say Oregon, and one other state are all trying to ban loot boxes. If not, they want the game to be rated 18 or plus for gambling. There's already three countries who have just completely banned loot boxes in general. So these games can't be sold in those countries. They can't be played in those countries. So, and there's countries like Australia who, for the last 6 years, I believe, you have to say all the rates of the items that are dropping. You have to disclose all of this information that made loot boxes so lucrative. Which means that the loot boxes are going to go. And I think what they're trying to do is they're bringing back this thing where you can buy skins with gold and with gems. Every single skin in the game you're going to be able to buy with gold and gems. Well, that hasn't been confirmed. But a good amount of skins will be either purchasable with gold or gems. And I think they're just going to try to wipe the shards and replace all your shards with gems. They're going to wipe the loot boxes and replace all that stuff with gems. And I believe you're going to be able to buy everything.
The shards are just a product of the loot boxes, right?
Yeah. And I think the shards are going to immediately transition. Everything that's purchasable by shards, I believe, is also going to be purchasable by gold. Mm-hmm. And I think they're just going to take shards and either give it to you as gems or gold. And then all the loot boxes are going to disappear. I just don't know how long that process is going to take. But that's my prediction on that. Is that they're just getting rid of all of it.
I would be okay with that. I can't stand the all these different currencies, and I've definitely bought loot boxes and won, you know, you win loot boxes from watching streams or whatever it is. And I don't mind it. I don't feel like, for me, it's not like I'm gambling to see, you know, I like opening the loot boxes and it's fun, but mainly it's like, I think the last set of loot boxes I got, I was trying to get a specific skin and I ended up getting it. It was, I don't.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it was the Stitches, the one of the teddy bear.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've been thinking about picking up one of those. I was just gonna buy it with gems, though.
I know. And the problem is that you can't just buy one, right?
You can't buy one color. I would buy like three colors, which
see, and that's the thing, man. Like, you're getting
well. That's what they want to do. So essentially, they want you to be able to buy individual colors again with gems, and they want you're supposed to be everything that's shards. You're supposed to be able to buy with gold now, and then everything's. They're just making it, consolidating it again, kind of back to where it was, but now you can buy skins with gold, which you couldn't do before outside of master skins. I think it's just generally a good change, but it hasn't been announced other than like a small announcement from Kayla Milker, who kind of said, hey, you're going to be able to buy skins with gold. And we're like, but it's all in a big effort to try to get rid of loot boxes. Like, EA has already kind of made this announcement of, all the games that they're coming out with won't have loot boxes. Anthem, for example, doesn't have any loot boxes. They have nothing that's randomly purchased. If you want to buy a skin, you buy a skin. Simple as that.
I feel like the community, and not like the Blizzard or Heroes community, but like gaming and people as a whole, Reddit, you know, whatever, lashing out at microtransactions, like, I don't know.
Yeah, like, I don't actually mind like cosmetics. I like buying a skin. People are always like, oh, you're spending money for pixels. I'm like, yeah, that's like half of what I do is pixels. So I spend more money on a graphics card so I can get more pixels. Isn't that the same thing? So I personally, like, when I get a new game, and if there's a $10 skin and I buy that and I'm the only person walking around whatever the lobby is with that skin on, yeah, I'll buy that skin. Like, I did that in League of Legends. I bought a ton of those, like, $30 skins just because, man, I was, like, the only one who would have that skin, and it was the coolest thing, and it's the same thing. Like, I don't mind spending a little bit of money, so I like cosmetics you can spend money on. I never want to buy things that give you, like, an advantage in the game, though. Like, that, to me, is always sketchy.
Yep.
But yeah, cosmetics, absolutely. All day long, I'll buy a cosmetic.
Yeah. It's starting to, I think we'll start, you got a couple of topics here left. We'll hit those up and then we'll start winding it down. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I really appreciate you being here. What are your thoughts on the recent changes? Like the XP changes, catapults, camps, mercs, all that kind of stuff. I know at first I believe it was a pro player who, within like an hour of the PTR coming out, was like, nope, fail, burn, you suck, go away, bye.
Yeah.
And I feel like, personally, it's fine. Like, I don't know.
So, I had one issue with it, and what their goal was, everyone kind of knows their goal, was that the game was kind of snowbally. If you won the first objective on Sky Temple, you had like a 72% chance of winning the entire game. Mm-hmm. And if you won the first objective on Brax's Holdout, now they fixed this a little bit because it was one of the more snowbally maps, but you had like a 70% chance to win the game. The reason why is because if you won that first objective, you got like a fort or two. That fort or two gave you enough experience to hit level 10 before the enemies. That level 10 before the enemies allowed you to grab a camp that you could invade and take one of their camps. That camp, they would be distracted and deal with that, which would win you another objective. And it just kept snowballing in that direction. Their goal with this change was to make it to where getting an early fort would give you a larger advantage in the late game, but wouldn't give you a large advantage in the early game. And so they were like, well, let's give them scaling catapults. To me, that was the disaster. Those catapults would just freeze the lane in the enemy side of the field, and if they just never actually killed the catapults but killed all the minions, they could keep the lane on their side of the field and you would never get soaked. I actually had a video where we missed like six waves of soak throughout this one video. And I was like, that's bad. I sent that into Blizzard as well as Zalia, which I believe is the pro player that said the whole thing was a disaster. And a few other people who looked at it, Mopsio, was pretty upset about it. And so we all kind of sent in our opinions, and they were like, okay, when you destroy a fort, you get 20% more experience passively. And I was like, okay, that's not bad. So some math, quick math was done, and figured it was around 5 minutes you'd get enough experience to equal a fort. So if you can get a fort early, which was normally scary because of those catapults you got, now every 5 minutes you have a fort down that the enemies don't, you get a fort worth of experience. That means that if you win the first objective, the next objective is going to be up usually within about 3 to 4 minutes, which means you won't even get that full fort of experience yet. It does solve the problem that they had. So I think after that fix, I think it's generally solved the problem that they felt there was, which is a snowball, which there really was a snowball problem. I don't think anyone can really deny that. There were comeback mechanics in the game, of course, like more experience on kills if you're behind. But I personally, and people might dislike me for that, or my opinion on this at least, I personally think that this was a good change after they made the 20% port change. I really like it, personally.
Daryl, what do you think?
I don't even know what the changes were. I didn't really pay attention to them. So I'm like, I'm hearing them all now. I'm like, oh, okay, there's changes.
Cool. That's actually the other thing, too, about that is most people didn't even notice the change.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's the change you need, is the change that only the highest level of players notice.
Yeah.
Where they're
like,
whoa, this is different. Let's abuse this. But I think I like that because a lot of the players didn't actually notice it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I mean, I listen to enough podcasts and follow it enough to where, you know, I was definitely finger on the pulse kind of thing. And I don't know, I heard a lot of uproar about it at first, but, you know, being in and playing, like, I don't know, it feels less snowbally. It feels like when you're, you know, even a level or two ahead, you're not just stomping everything down, you know. Everything kind of does this thing where you're not just getting way ahead, you know.
Yeah, I'd say it's most noticeable on maps like Sky Temple, where the first objective can get almost like an entire fort. By the second objective, people are usually fighting over like the level sevens, sometimes even the level tens. And if they were fighting over those tiers and one team's like a whole level ahead, then they win that second objective, which if they win that second one, now they're ahead on 13s, they're ahead on 16s, it just keeps snowballing. So Sky Temple was a big problem with that. But I think overall, I really like the change. And a lot of my friends that I've asked didn't even notice it happen.
Yeah.
They're like, what are these catapults? And I was like, they spawn every three waves. I'm like, it's from the forts. And they're like, is this new? I don't remember this. I'm like, yeah, it's new. And they're like, okay.
All right. Well, Imperius just came out. I haven't had a chance to try him out yet. But what are your first impressions? Good, bad, ugly?
I mean, his win rates are really low right now. But I think that's better. People were complaining a lot of times whenever characters came out, heroes came out, and they were always like 55% win rates and just crazy dominating OP, everything. Yeah. Like the last three heroes that have released have been really low win rates. And I like it because it gives like the people who really want to practice a hero and understand the hero, it gives them time to like see if the hero is good first. Like Sylvanas, her win rate was like 40%. And then I played her in the W build and I was like, yo guys, like I'm blowing people up. Like, do people just not know what they're doing? Like, she definitely doesn't need any buffs. And so I think it gives people time to actually get better at him before they decide if he's actually bad. But in terms of like balance aside, he's fun. Like he's just a pretty simple hero. And I think sometimes, again, I'm a big believer in like less is more. You can get more creative as long as you get like very simple tools. And so I think he's fun to play. I think that's just the easiest thing. His kit is pretty basic. Like his W is just a very simple, oh, damage goes ahead, slows people. But then you get a lot of debate over, do you use that before or after a charge? If you use it before a charge, it makes your charge easier to land, but then the slow ends by the time they land, and then you don't have them slowed to follow up with an auto attack. So despite that he has a lot of very simple abilities, there's a lot of nuance to when you should be using him, which is why I actually like him a lot. He has a major downside, which is his wave clear. And so I think that he's got like a level 7 talent that makes it to where your attacks cleave. It's kind of a must, I personally believe. It's just a must pick. Unless you're main tank and you're following around, like you're just going with like a Gul'dan or something running around. But if you're like in the solo lane, I think it's a must. But overall, I mean, he's fun to play. He's, again, his whole kit like feels simple. But sometimes that just, I don't know, sometimes that just feels good to play.
Yeah.
I feel like every time I turn around, I'm out of mana. Like, if you're doing anything, you're like...
Yeah, he's a little...
It's gone.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are using a lot of his abilities to try to clear waves faster, and it's just not... Like, you should really only ever use your W to clear lanes. Everything else is very, like, single-target heavy, and I don't think I had too many mana problems, but I also played him pretty conservatively.
I didn't I got him to level 5, and I've just been, like, engaging a lot. So I'm constantly like being aggressive with him it's not really like a combo so much, and like and now that you were mentioning it, now you gotta really think about, you know, do you Q first and then W, or you know, but I just I'm constantly getting in there and constantly, you know, using everything, and it feels like after 3 or 4, you know, aggressive dives or pushes, like I'm out of mana, so it's you know, it's a constant. I'm either tapping or hearthing, and I don't feel like with a lot of other warriors, excuse me, in particular with warriors, I'm doing that quite as much. So I don't know. Maybe I just need to, like you said, stop using all everything.
Yeah, I think they want him to be like a solo laner, and I think that's where you're supposed to just kind of like stay in the lane, clear the lane, get your globe without being too aggressive on people. Like, just kind of get, like, quick trades without using a lot of mana. And I think if you play him as a main tank, that's where you start noticing that when your team wants to go in, you dive in just to see if your team's going to follow. And if they don't, you take a step back. And every time you do that, you're just losing a lot of mana. While a lot of, like, main tanks, if you go in, your team usually follows. Like, if you're Garrosh and you flip someone, your team's going to kill that person. So even though his mana costs are relatively high, you only need to do it once to kill someone.
He seems like he has a lot of potential to be a bit of a playmaker. If you land that Q on, you know, 2 or even 3 people, it's pretty, it's significant, you know, like it's, I was playing, with a buddy of mine and he was, anytime I landed that Q, he was there with Orphea just like laying it down, you know, and it was very, you know, you're kind of setting things up and it felt really good, but. Yeah,
it's quick. It's pretty easy to follow up too, because it's a long CC. It's 1 second, which is really high for a non-ultimate CC. Mm-hmm. Like, there's not a lot of CCs that are 1 second that's like an actual full stun that doesn't require a lot of like setup. Like, the Kerrigan stun requires a lot of setup, and I think that's only 0.75. But yeah, it's a really good CC. I actually think he's a really cool hero. I just think that... I think people haven't really gotten too used to him yet, and I think people are underrating the level 7 talent that I think is kind of a necessary pick.
The cleave?
It's like the lowest pick right now and the lowest win rate, and I think it's mainly just because yeah, because it's like you can wave clear without costing any mana, and you can double soak with him, and it's like that's a must. I think people keep using it for team fights, and it's not for team. I mean, you can pop it for team fights.
It's a fairly low cooldown too, I find. Like, if you're trying to double soak, you know, you can.
It's a deceptive cooldown because it says 18 seconds, but it's actually 22 seconds because it doesn't trigger the cooldown until your fourth attack.
Until it's done. Oh, okay. So, I didn't realize that. Yeah.
So it's a surprisingly longer cooldown than people think, but that's still a wave spawn every 30 seconds. So if you can clear a wave every 22 seconds, that's fine. That means you can at least clear one wave every 30 seconds, and then you can use like your other abilities to clear a second one if you need to double soak. So it's like just enough, but
right on. Daryl, do you have any other questions?
I don't think so. I think it was a good discussion this evening.
Oh, Paradox, did we miss anything, or do you have any other points you wanted to make before we wrap it up?
Nothing HOTS related, but I am curious because what other Blizzard games you guys normally play? I know you played a little bit of World of Warcraft, right?
Yeah, I think that's kind
just
of our
just a little bit.
A little. Yeah, that's been our bread and butter really
Think of the latest expansion? I know this is me interviewing you guys now, but
hey, no, let's do it. You go first.
Not much. That's what I think of it. When they first announced it, I was there at BlizzCon when they announced it, and I was disappointed to hear the announcement because it's the same thing we've been doing for 15 years, the battle between Horde and Alliance. Put the Warbreck in Warcraft. I've heard that how many times? And now it's the full expansion focused on that. It was like, man. And now it's, I don't know, it's just, I'm still playing, you know, almost every day. I still log in and do something, but
Definitely. It's
definitely not my favorite expansion. I'll say that much. Especially,
I saw the announcement and I was like, that I was disappointed. The same thing. Like, I'm not much of a. I will play PvP in games that are dedicated to PvP, but in a game that's like a looter, I'm like, I want to be doing dungeons all day.
Well, yeah.
And I saw that and I was like, well, that's disappointing. I saw the new races and I was like, okay, I'm in that though. Like, all those races looked so cool, except for the fact that I never played Legion. Which means I didn't get any of the races. So I paid $60, $50 bucks for a game that I couldn't even play the one thing that I wanted to play in the game. So I played Legion, but I never did any of the dailies. I literally just, like, I got up to the first raid, led a guild, we did the first raid, and then I was done. And I was like, when that happened, I was pretty much out of it. I got a character like 117 before I was like, I want to play these characters, but I don't want to spend 3 months to get all my dailies done so I can actually play the characters I paid for. So, and I know a lot of people were like, oh, well, just because you paid for it doesn't mean you haven't earned it yet in game. And I was like, this isn't a job. I just want to, play the troll stand upright.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, otherwise, I have friends that are still playing it a lot. So I was just curious on your guys' opinions on the latest expansion.
I will always love World of Warcraft, and I like it. I probably like it more than most people. It's got kind of a negative vibe right now. A lot of stuff does, but
it is everything right now. I mean, like, I get excited for a game and I'll go to the comments and literally everyone's finding anything negative about it.
Yeah, it's like, you suck. Good luck. Yeah, except for what was it? The second dinner. The ex-Hearthstone guys over there doing the new Marvel game. Like, that seems to be getting... even though it's NetEase that's funding the whole thing, everybody seems to be pretty okay with them doing that, so...
I don't even know. Yeah, just wait. The people, when they find the game, they'll tear it apart.
I don't love BFA. I don't love the story going on. It's cool. Hopefully we kill some more... Jaina gets her... what's coming to her, you know? But I don't know. I'm ready for some new content. Ready for the new raid to come out. We'll see where it goes. I will always play it and I like it, and I will always level one of every alt up and get them all geared out and everything. That's what I do. I've got like 8 or 9 right now, but it's definitely not what it was in Legion. I don't think it's as bad as it was in Warlords, but it's not. It's definitely not as much fun as I was having in Legion.
Yeah. I actually really enjoyed Legion. I didn't like the legendary system, but I loved Mythic Pluses. I thought those were a really cool addition.
Yeah.
My favorite part about Battle for Azeroth is that I can use a slur that sounds really, really bad, but people don't know what it means unless they play World of Warcraft. All my friends play Horde, and so whenever I talk to my friends, I'm like, what's up, tree burners? And then they're like, hashtag not my war chief, and I'm like, well, I mean, you're on that side, so just saying. But that's
funny.
Where's the marshmallows?
I don't know. I haven't played too much of Battle for Azeroth, so I was just curious because I know you guys play a decent amount. Just because, so when I get to World of Warcraft, like I'll go to Guild Wars 2, and they're all trying to like innovate their quests and their stories to where they've all got these new unique ways of going through the leveling path. And then once you level one character, you could choose to not level the other ones the same way. So you could be like, well, I'm going to level one with just cooking, or I'm going to level one by just doing world versus world, or I'm going to level one by just doing PvP. And there's like always other ways. In World of Warcraft, I'll ask people, I'll be like, oh, what's the way to level a character? And like, oh, you quest. And I was like, well, can I do anything else? And they're like, well, you used to be able to level with PvP, but now it takes like months. And they're like, you can level with dungeons up until like level, I don't know, 95, but then you have to quest. And it's just questing. And it's like, for me, I like having a bit of variety. If I do all the quests once, I'm like, well, what do I do now? Is that Brett that said pet battles? yeah, that's... I will tell you right now. So when Mists of Pandaria came out, I had a max level character of every single class, and that was like the first expansion I've ever done that. And I did it like 95% through pet battles. And the funniest thing was that every time I got a character to max level, they had like the worst gear. One character, I'm not kidding, I actually leveled from like 15 to max level off of pet battles, and he had level 15 gear on him at max level.
I believe it. Like,
what do I do with this?
There was there was some sort of thing for a while, and I think it was in Mists, where pet battles was giving a whole lot of experience.
It was 10% of your level, no matter what level you were at, it was 10% of your level per pet battle. So 10 pet battles could give you an entire thing. Then they dropped it down to 1%. And that still was reasonable, like 100 pet battles, because it didn't take that long. You'd be watching a show or something. I don't think it was actually 1%. I think it was like 4 or something. It wasn't that bad, because I think it was like 30 pet battles. It was like probably 3 to 4%. And but if you're watching a show or something, they all take like 5 minutes. 30 pet battles isn't too bad. And it was actually like really cool. So so I was doing that, and yeah, but I don't know. And then yeah, like Valak says, if you play a tank, I do play a tank. It's just that, like, even the dungeons, like, I'm at 117 right now, and the dungeons do take a long time to level. Like,
the dungeons are like, they're not as forgiving, or at least like the normal, like, leveling up, you know, it's not quite as, you know, raffle stomp as it was before. You know, it takes a little time and coordination, and and the XP is not what it used to be either.
But either way, I mean, I still enjoy WoW. I'm on a RP server, so half the joy of WoW is just acting like you're in a really large Dungeons and Dragons game, and avoiding avoiding, what is it, Moonshire or
Goldshire.
Avoiding Goldshire for your life. But yeah, that's where I'm at. So it's always a fun game, and
man, we're on an RP realm. I don't mess around with that
RP though.
What realm are you guys on?
We're on Earthen Ring.
Oh, okay. I'm on Moongard, but, so
yeah. But we're Horde anyway, so we burn trees. So
Yeah, you guys are the tree burners. All right,
we are the tree burners.
Absolutely. That's fair.
Yep. Hey, I noticed we have one folk in the chat that may have been the winner of the 365 days of World of Warcraft. From our last show, we had we did some giveaways, and we never got to announce that one because we wanted people to email in and give us their stories. I won't read the email, but Daryl, do you want to announce the winner then?
All right, so the winner of the 12 months of World of Warcraft is Gondal.
All right.
Congratulations, Gondal. I will send you the code, and you can pop that into your Battle.net account, and you will have
That's
one free year of World of Warcraft.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. We had an anonymous donor give that away on the last show. So, yeah, super awesome.
That's pretty solid.
Yeah, we had a sender won the Warcraft 3.
Reforged?
Yep.
That's
and,
awesome.
And Kevin from the Darkmoon Herald won the it was a signed New York XL NYXL Overwatch League jersey signed by the 2018 team. So yeah, we had some pretty
cool. You guys
cool,
have some really cool giveaways.
Yeah,
that's,
man.
Awesome.
Yeah, well, it was thanks to our donors, people sending in stuff for us to give away. So hey, if you ever want us to give anything away, let us know. Codes, whatever. All right, well, let's wrap this up then. If you haven't already, make sure you come and join the official Training Dummies Discord server at discord.me/ttd. It is the best way to keep in touch and get real-time interaction with us and our community, as well as the awesome guests like Paradox that you've heard here on the show tonight. That's discord.me/ttd. And since we are streaming our shows live, head on over to twitch.tv/thetrainingdummies. And give us a follow so you know we fire up the stream.
It seems fate has brought us together.
You have my gratitude.
We make a great team.
I'm sure glad you're around.
Well, if it ain't my favorite person.
You have your uses, don't you?
You have quite a talent there.
Together, our victory is assured.
Good enough.
All right, Rob, what do you got for shoutouts tonight?
Well, definitely Paradox for coming on. I really appreciate it, man. It was a fairly short notice that, but he was very generous and loaned us his time. Daryl, thank you to you. I'm glad you were able to recover all the bunch of the audio clips and actually do a proper save of those now. I was going to say thanks to Darnie for not giving me that sword and keeping it for transmog. That kind of that hurt a little bit. I brought an alt to raid last week, a lower eye level warrior, and she got a sword that dropped off one of the bosses, and it was a massive upgrade for me, and she kept it for transmog. So thank you, Darnie, for that. Appreciate that.
You are on an RP server, so you know what you got.
There you go.
Hey, you know what? It's an alt. I'm not even mad at all. Like if it were main, I would have fussed about it, but no. And she is kind enough. She tanks for us, so you can't really sweat your tanks too much. So. And definitely, yeah, the raid team, all those folks that make our Friday nights fun every week. Daryl, what do you got, man?
Yeah, definitely Paradox. Thanks for coming on and talking heroes this evening. It was a good discussion. Rob, shout out to you guys setting up this episode. It was good. I hadn't seen your videos before, but I've watched a couple now since Rob had set you up, and especially the making an impact. That one kind of that was like there's a lot of good points in there, and I'll definitely take that to heart when I get some time to play heroes again. And then of course, as always, the raid team, and specifically Gondel. Congratulations on winning that 360. Days of Warcraft. Paradox, do you have any shout outs this evening?
Shout outs to Rob and Daryl. Seriously, Rob, you kind of just grabbed me. I was over watching a Twitch stream together, and it just literally grabbed me, and you're like, let's go. And I took a little bit. I mean, we both had BlizzCon, we had to go through and all that. But seriously, thank you guys so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. And shout out to Falk. I think he snuck in. I think you might have saw me on Twitter, and he snuck in. But and fan awesome. Of Kronos. By the way, Kronos is my tortoise, if you guys don't know. So fan of Kronos is on from my stream. But thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, before we wrap this up, Paradox, where can people reach you if they have any other questions or they just want to get in touch with you?
So my YouTube channel is the main thing that most people know me by, so I'd recommend checking that out. That's youtube.com/notparadox, no spaces, no caps. And then my Twitter, if you want to actually get a hold of me, best place is usually either my Discord, which you can find that on my YouTube, any of the YouTube descriptions, or my Twitter and Instagram, which are both at @not_paradox. My Facebook, I believe, is Not Paradox Official. So any of those, any of the social media, you can all find me there. Contact me on any of those. I respond to them all within usually a day or two. But I also hang out in the Discord and usually will join people in games a couple times a week.
Cool.
All right. Well, that wraps up episode 232 of The Training Dummies. You can find this and past episodes of the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and thetrainingdummies.com. And remember, we are all just jackasses with mics. So until next time.
It's advice you can trust.
Woo!
From people you shouldn't.
Woo!
So forget what I said before. Now is when things are getting weird.
Oh, a fan, huh? Well, who can blame you?
Thanks for all the love and support
at patreon.com/trainingdummies.
Perhaps you require more training,
dummies.
Uther.
I'm not dignifying that with a response.
Look, there's a little note.
patreon.com/trainingdummies
has not been evaluated by the FDA. Please do not operate large machinery or mythical creatures after healing. Side effects may include nausea, dimensional displacement, stomach irritation, and sentient discharges. Always consult a doctor before using
patreon.com/trainingdummies.
Was that not enough jokes? Were you not entertained?